Seekers, how you doing tonight? Welcome to the program. My name is Mike Malloy. Thank you for tuning in, whichever way you're doing that. This hour is sponsored by Elaine from Tacoma. Elaine from Tacoma. Her message, thank you for coming to KPTK's Seattle Forum. And to Kathy and Molly for all they do for the program, including the music. Yeah, Molly picks the music, doesn't she? She just kind of rifles through this mountain of CDs we have. Thanks, Elaine. Elaine from Tacoma is our first hour sponsor tonight. I decided at some point today I'm starting to get very, very fatigued with this program. This happens periodically. Not with the program, not with the people who tune in and the people who correspond, so on and so forth, but just with the general concept of going over the same issues every night. You know what I'm saying? It just gets tiresome after a while. And, you know, every day, at some point in the morning, I'll switch over to, or I'll turn on CNN or MSNBC or hell, even the Weather Channel, CNBC, some information channel just to see, okay, is there something happening that would indicate that a sizable chunk of the population of this country is awake and alert and saying this nonsense has got to stop? And in order to make that occur, where is the crowd gathering? Is it, I don't know, St. Louis, Detroit, Washington, San Francisco, Minneapolis? Where? Where is the crowd gahring? Where is our Tahrir Square? Where are people congregating and, you know, putting up their signs and pitching their little mountain tents and making a declaration that we finally have reached that point and we're not going to take any more of it? And, you know, I'll flip through the channels. And usually at the hour of the morning that I turn on the information channels, I will get their D block stories, the lighter stories. I don't mean they're light in content, because some of them are pretty tragic, but they're not global stories. Global, I mean, having an effect on everyone, except maybe a little bit of emotional effect. And I'll sit there for a few minutes watching this stuff. I think, no, well, okay, then I guess there's no big gathering. And I think, wait a minute, you're watching commercial television. So what do you expect? So then I'll go to the internet, and start flipping through some of the various blog sites that I'm aware of that are poised to cover that great getting up morning, and nothing. So, okay, So flip open the New York Times and read the stuff from yesterday. You know, somebody said when you hear it, it's news. When you read it, it's history. And so I'll start reading some history of the past 24, 48, 72 hours. There it is, the New York Times. Okay, let's see what happened today. I did come across something today that I'll get to a little bit later about Israeli women and Palestinian women, Jews and Muslims crossing that horrific divide and performing a very simple function together. And I found that, you know, I was sitting there eating my honey bunches of oats this morning and reading this story. I think, well, I'll be damned. Here's something good, something new, something different. Rachel Maddow is being sued by a Christian rocker. His name is Bradley Dean, obviously a right-wing freak. He's suing her for $50 million, which is hysterically funny, charging that Rachel defamed him because he said she made misleading statements about his views on gay rights and Islamic law, Sharia law. He's a Minnesota metal rocker. What is a Christian metal rocker? What is that, Kathy? I have no idea. This is somebody that did one too many hits and just tipped over the edge, apparently, and decided that he saw Jesus instead of a 20-foot rabbit, and now he is a Christian metal rocker. He announced his lawsuit in a press conference or press release yesterday. The suit comes from an August 2010 segment on Rachel's program in which she quoted a statement he made on his radio show. He's a busy little creep, isn't he? He's got a radio show and he's a Christian metal rocker and he files lawsuits and apparently he just hates gay people. But here's what he said, quote, and here's what Rachel said, quote, quoting this freak, Bradley Dean. Muslims are calling for the execution of homosexuals in America. They themselves are upholding the laws that are even in the Bible, the Judeo-Christian God, but they seem to be more moral than the American Christians do. Because these people are livid about enforcing their laws. They know homosexuality is an abomination. If America won't enforce the laws, God will rise up a foreign enemy to do just that. End quote. Christian metal rocker and obvious psychopath Bradley Dean. Don't you love Christians? Don't you love fundamentalist Christians? They're so eaten up. They are so saturated with their hate and their poison and their sickness, and yet they claim to be representatives of the Prince of Peace. Isn't that sweet? Isn't that psychotic? Bradley Dean charged Maddow with deliberately ignoring a disclaimer that he issued, which stressed that he was not calling for gay people to be killed. Of course not. It just sounds that way. Like Glenn Beck doesn't call for children in summer camps to be murdered because they might be Hitler Youth. It just sounds that way. He said Maddow's airing of his statement, the same one he aired on his program, caused serious harm to him and the ministry he runs. Oh, my God, he runs a ministry? He has a radio show? He's a metal rocker? And by God, a blood and guts, kill them all, Christian! Son of a bitch, he's got a busy dance book, doesn't he? Woo! Actually, Rachel did read the disclaimer. She did read it. So there goes your lawsuit, you turd. The disclaimer that Rachel read, we have never and will never call for the execution of homosexuals. She read just after airing this freak's statement. Oh, the freak, Bradley Dean, the guy who has a ministry. You can imagine what that ministry is about. And he's a metal rocker and a Christian and, you know, all this other stuff. He's an ally of Michelle Bachmann. And he accused Rachel and the, quote, left-wing media, end quote, of using him to harm her presidential prospects. Even though he is filing this $50 million lawsuit, Bradley Dean said that, quote, money's not the issue, end quote. MSNBC called the lawsuit baseless.
Progressive Talk. It's Mike Malone.
Twenty-one past the hour. Rick Warren, the guy who figured, well, another one of these mega preachers figured out a long time ago, there's money in the Jesus business. Why are we doing this? Is Wednesday night. This is prayer meeting night. So we've got a couple of items from the wacky world of fundamental religion on the program tonight. You know, Wednesday night. You know what we do on Wednesday. Prayer meeting night. Anyway, where was I? I'm looking back at this Bradley Dean lawsuit again. What a freak. What a little bastard. What an absolute bastard. You know, he said, this is what the right-wingers always do. They make these hideous statements like this pig Glenn Beck about the children in Norway being similar to Hitler Youth, the ones that were murdered. Don't start. Take a deep breath. And then we have somebody like Bradley Dean, who says what he says and is quoted on MSNBC by Rachel Maddow, and then he gets his jockey shorts way up where they shouldn't be and decides to file $50 million lawsuit. Oh, Jesus, these people turn my stomach. Rick Warren, mega church pastor. They had to invent a description of the building / congregation for some of these teachers of the Holy Gospel. Even though Jesus said to stay away from places like that, Jesus said, where two or three are gathered together in my name, there is my church. What's the matter, Rick? You didn't get that part? You sleazy bastard, every one of you. Oh, my God! Anyway, Rick Warren operates his con artist job in Southern California, and he tweeted and then deleted sort of a nasty remark at those who want to increase the debt ceiling. This is according to, I guess it's an alternative newspaper, the Newport Beach Patch. So here's what he tweeted. Half of America pays no taxes. Zero. Now, before I finish his tweet, right there, you know he's a goddamn liar. He's a liar. And is thou shalt not lie, is that in the 10 suggestions? It is. Thou shalt not bear false witness, right? So, Warren, your ass is going to hell just on that one, buddy. You're going straight to hell because you lied and you used an instrument of Satan, the computer, to tell your lie. So you're doomed, buddy. He wrote, half of America pays no taxes, zero. So they're happy for tax rates to be raised on the other half that does pay taxes. That's what he tweeted in response to Obama's Monday speech on the debt ceiling. Now, Rick Warren happens to be very, very wealthy. There is tons of money in the Jesus business, especially that part of it where you are preaching horrific death, pain, destruction that lasts for eternity unless you accept Rick Warren's version of life after death. Oh, and send him some money. So Rick Warren tweets that, the first half of which is a lie. The second half is his irritation that as an American citizen who operates a tax-exempt organization, huh, Rick? What about that old big-ass megachurch of yours? How much taxes do you pay out there, boy? You filthy hypocrite. So the first half is a lie, and the second half is about his earnings. Because he does get paid. Oh, does he get paid? And preachers have to pay income tax, right? I mean, don't they? Don't they pay income tax? I think they do. I know these temples of hypocrisy, whether they're Catholic, Protestant, Muslim, Jewish, whatever, it doesn't make any difference. These temples of fear and loathing are exempt. But I think the people spreading the lies and the fear, I think they have to pay taxes. Don't know. Somebody will send me an email on that one. But if Rick Warren does have to pay taxes, he has a massive income. Of course, he hides a lot of it, like most of these Christian hypocrites do. You know, they may have a Rolls Royce or two stuck away someplace. Oh, but that was a gift. That was a gift from my congregation. They love me so much because I am leading them away from the hellfire. I hate these people. He later deleted the tweet after an outcry on two of my favorite blog sites, Wonkette and Politico, and seemed to apologize for the comment to Twitter user at Carolee, you know, over at, where is she? She's at Think Progress. And this is the tweet he put up. At Carolee, you are 100% right. It did sound mean. More on this when we come back, because it is Wednesday. If you put your faith in me, then you'll pass the train while the choir's singing. Mirror my God to thee. Step in the line. Can you spare a dime? I heard him say, step right on up, good people. Drop a book that matters. Stealing in the name of the Lord. That's what it's doing, man. Stealing in the name of the Lord.
Better stand back. Here come 50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. All right, back to this con artist and super hustler, Rick Warren. Well, by the way, this hour is sponsored by Elaine from Tacoma. Thank you, Elaine. Her message, thank you for coming to KTPK Seattle Forum. And thanks also to Kathy and Molly for all they do for the program, including the music that Kathy plays. Elaine from Tacoma. Thank you, Elaine. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Anyway, Rick Warren, another type of Christian that Jesus, if he came back, would kick his ass clean across the country. Rick Warren tweeted that half of America pays no taxes, zero. So they're happy for tax rates to be raised on the other half that does pay taxes. That's what he tweeted. Presumably in response to Obama's Monday speech on the debt ceiling. He later deleted the tweet after the outcry on Wonkette and Politico and Carolee over at Think Progress wrote to him, and he responded, Carolee, you are 100% right. It did sound mean. No, Rick, it didn't sound mean. It sounded like a typical reaction from a right-wing Christian insane person like you. It didn't sound mean at all. It sounded very typical. But, of course, it's not true that poor Americans pay zero taxes. 47% of the population owed no income tax for 2009. These Americans still do pay all sorts of taxes, payroll taxes, sales tax, state tax, local tax. Jesus, I hate these right-wingers. Many lower-income families, where's this from? I guess this is from Huffington Post. Many lower-income families' tax burdens are reduced because of the earned income tax credit, a benefit awarded to people in lower tax brackets. Who came with that? Was that a Nixon? I think that was a Nixon plan. Wasn't that a Nixon product? Great idea. Thanks, Dick. Too bad you're not around now to be president, right? Obama's speech on the debt ceiling called into question the Republican Party's insistence that a new deal only cut spending. You know, that's all they want to do. Yeah, you know, you've had your belly full of this, your head full of it. It's been going on for weeks now. I'm so sick of it. I would like to do something violent, but I better not. So I don't. But no increase of revenue through new taxes. No. You know, I got an email from some freak today, and I just sent him a response with a bunch of cuss words in it. But he tried to tell me that Americans overtaxed, and I, you know, all Americans, American people, American businesses, American corporations. That's the kind of ignorance that makes me just want to grab somebody that, you know, just drive down the street, find somebody standing at a bus stop, just grab them and start punching the hell out of them. You know, because, you know, then I could tweet, oh, that was kind of mean. What my emailer this morning, in his abysmal ignorance, Americans are paying less in taxes now than I think ever in decades, if not our entire history, as an actual percentage of whatever they figure these percentages on. Corporate America, most corporations, any corporation pays taxes is looked at by the other corporations as a bunch of dumbasses. What? You pay taxes? Oh my God, are you dumb? We over here at ExxonMobil, not only do we not pay taxes, we got millions in refunds! Well, how do you get a refund if you didn't pay anything? Ah, that's the joke! Ah! So I get emails from half-ass right-wingers like this who don't have a clue what they're talking about. They just, you know, they've had their brains removed and little packages of Glenn Beck inserted or Rush Limbaugh. And anytime they hear certain words or phrases, those packages fly open. Americans are sick of paying taxes. We're not going to have any more revenue. You know, it's just... Oh, well, you know what it is. Anyway, the Obama framed the plan as a choice to ask lower-income or fixed-income Americans to sacrifice before corporations and wealthier taxpayers do. Now, this is what he said. This is what got Rick Warren's ass in an uproar, apparently. He had to lay down his Bible and look at his checkbook. And then tweet. But this is what the president said. Most Americans, regardless of political party, don't understand how we can ask a senior citizen to pay more for her Medicare before we ask corporate jet owners and oil companies to give up tax breaks that other companies don't get. How can we ask a student to pay more for college before we ask hedge fund managers to stop paying taxes at a lower rate than their secretaries? How can we slash funding for education and clean energy before we ask people like me to give up tax breaks we don't need and didn't ask for? Oh, did that piss off Rick Warren? Too bad Mr. Obama didn't say, and how can we continue to allow these lying savages who present themselves as ministers of God to continue their tax-exempt status, whether they're Christian or Jew, any subdivision of Christianity, Muslim, whatever? Do you realize, America, how much untaxed property exists in this country that's owned by these purveyors of fear, loathing, and other bad stuff? But, of course, Obama wouldn't do that because, as he said many times, he, too, is a Christian. Oh, yeah, Rick Warren is the pastor of the Saddleback megachurch in Orange County. He's the author of best-selling books like The Purpose-Driven Life. His ministries include domestic and international charity for the poor. Oh, Rick, bless your little pea-picking heart, huh? Oh, man, that is so sweet. He is also known for his reverse tithing, living on 10% of his income while giving away 90%. Really, Rick, do you do that? How much do you get paid? Huh? What do you think Rick gets paid? $60,000 a year that's taxable? So he gives away $56,000 and keeps six? Of course, that's easy to do when you're the head of a great big enterprise like the Saddleback Church. Excuse me. Mega Church. Oh, yeah, and this is the same guy who was chosen by our esteemed, bold, brave president to deliver the prayer at the inauguration ceremony, which in itself caused a bunch of controversy because Rick Warren also believes that gay people are sick and twisted and perform abominations. I bet you have videos about those abominations, don't you, Rick? Huh? And are all condemned to hell because God made a mistake. Right, Rick? When he, she, it created gay folk. Well, there you go. There's your infallibility argument just tossed right out the window. Oh, no, 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 no. See, this is why these Christian psychopaths and the Muslim psychopaths and the Jewish psychopaths refuse to accept the idea that you are what you are, that you are born a certain way. Because if that is true, which it is, then it means that they are defying and defiling God's creations. Oh, my. Not that they don't do that constantly with their perversion of the gospel, whether the gospel is Christian, Jewish, or Muslim. Doesn't make any difference. Now, I'm talking about fundamentalists here. You know, don't write me letters and tell me about all the good works that a group of nuns do. I'm aware of that. And that's why that's not what I'm referring to. You know what I'm referring to. Of course you do. So don't be an ass now and send me one of these dumb emails. So, there you have Rick Warren, who gave the prayer at the inauguration and then turns around and bites the hand that feeds him. One of the hands. He has lots of hands that feed him. He's into an awful lot. There's a lot of business and a lot of money in the Jesus business. I mean, there's tons of money. Tons of money. That's because there always has been lots of money in fear and loathing. Oh, my God, just go on the Internet. Type in fear and loathing, and after you get past the Hunter Thompson stuff, you'll find out how much money there is in the fear and loathing business, of which religion is the greatest purveyor of both. Always has been, always will be, world without end. Amen and amen. What else we got? Jeez. Is it still Wednesday? It is, isn't it? All right. Well, this is prayer meeting night. What else have I got here? Have we got any more prayer meeting stuff? I don't think so. I think we got it all out of the way in the first hour here. We purged in the first hour. So stick around. Oh, I've got a good one here about the Grand Strand Tea Party president. Grand Strand is over here on the Carolina coast. You're going to like this one. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy.
Rejoice the truth. It's the religion of the end.
Seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Elaine from Tacoma, Washington. Elaine from Tacoma, she has a message. Thank you for coming to KTPK Seattle Forum. KTPK. KTPK. Isn't it, what do you call that when you say a word like that or a sound? What do you, not alliteration. What is it? KTPK. Anyway, thanks you for coming to KPTK Seattle Forum and to Kathy and Molly for all they do for the program, including the music. Elaine from Tacoma.
I posted some pictures of Molly in the forum in the gallery.
Pictures of in the gallery. Miss Molly's gallery of the forum. She has her own gallery now. Jesus God. The president of the Grand Strand Tea Party. The Grand Strand is Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. There's just beaches forever over in that part of the state on the Atlantic coast. And it's referred to as the Grand Strand. The president of the Grand Strand Tea Party and his son were arrested on charges related to counterfeit language software being sold to a man in Loras, South Carolina, according to a Horry County police report. That's the name of it. Don't make any jokes. Horry County, that's the name of the county. Anthony Jack Trinka, 61, and Michael Robert Trinka, both of Myrtle Beach, spent about 2 hours at the detention center yesterday, each charged with unauthorized use or trafficking in counterfeit trademarks, according to jail records. They were both released on $5,000 bail. A Horry County police report showed that a 46-year-old man called police June 17th about six Rosetta Stone language software packages he purchased from Anthony Trinka, and he learned the items were counterfeit. The man said at the end of May he bought the products for $125 each after seeing an ad on Craigslist. The man said he picked up two of the software packages after meeting Anthony Trinka in a parking lot at Market Commons on May the 29th. The next day, the man purchased the other packages from Trinka's home on Palmetto Glens, which is where Trinka operated a computer business known as Computer Repair Dirt Cheap. Well, yeah, when you're using stolen software, I'm sure. The man told police he saw several other computer software products inside the home. Blah, 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 blah. The man said he tried 10 times to get his money back from Trinka, who refused to return it. Trinka is listed as president of the Grand Strand Tea Party, according to the group's website and information. All this comes from thesunnews.com, which is Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Thanks, Reg. So there you go. Just another example of the the tea party and the pictures of these guys. The son is kind of cute. The old man looks like, well, you go take a look. What is it? thesunnews.com. The Sun News. No, it's not the English one, the British one. thesunnews.com. Grand Strand Tea Party president. The hypocrisy flows nigh waist deep here on a Wednesday evening. You know, think about this for a second. If Bush had not given the wealthy the tax cut that he did, if Bush had not ordered two unfunded wars, aside from all the death and destruction, we're talking money here. If Bush had not signed into law the unfunded Medicare prescription drug program, which was a blessing to the pharmaceutical companies, a plan that, by the way, was designed to end Medicare, not to help people on Medicare. If he hadn't done those things, just those three things, we would right now have zero debt. There would be no ceiling to raise because there would be no debt. And balanced budgets for the foreseeable future. So what the hell are the Republican thugs talking about? What is Boehner and this little pissant Eric Cantor talking about? Well, what is this? What is this crap? What is Grover Norquist? What's the burr up his behind? When Bush and Cheney, a.k.a. the Bush crime family, took over this country illegally and fraudulently both times. And if you want to know more about the theft of the second election in Ohio, go to bradblog.com and read about it. The proof is there now. If George Bush and Dick Cheney had just done their stealing someplace else, these filthy sons of bitches, if they just would have worked some other scam, this country would be solvent, beyond solvent. We would still have jobs. Believe it or not, we would have had jobs. Yes, I know, Clinton, blah, blah. We would have had jobs. We would not have a meltdown. We wouldn't have had the real estate bubble. We wouldn't have people being tossed out on the street. We wouldn't be $14 trillion in debt. If the Bush crime family had simply left things alone, things they didn't understand, things they took a look at and said, well, be goddamned, look at this. Black ink. Oh, party! And off they went. So, to you right-wing teabagger freaks, just listen, please, try to keep in mind that your pigs in Congress, your Republican pigs, and your Bush-Cheney pigs, and all these gouging, filthy, capitalist pigs, the ones that pay nothing into the treasury of the country that they hide in, so that people around the world don't string their asses up since they pay such crappy wages and make such crappy products. Just keep this in mind, you teabag freaks. Your Republican Party did this to us. So why don't we string them all up? Listen, in the distance, you hear the... Is that... Could it be the tumbrils turning? Could it be the guillotine moving to the city square? Oh, praise Jesus if it is.
Do we have a...
Two of the Malloy program tonight on Church Night. I think we're finished. God, I hope so. This hour is sponsored by Andrew. His message, Hexistor, H-E-X-I-S-T-O-R, Hexistor, provider of online backup for small businesses. Hexistor.com. Check him out, will you? H-E-X-I. S-T-O-R. Thanks, Andrew. Hexistore.com. I think this is true. Ronald Reagan, President Reagan, raised capital gains taxes to 87%. Right now, they are at 15%. And part of the budget or the, I should say, the National Debt Reduction Plan was to increase just a little bit capital gains taxes, not increase them 72 more percent, which would put them at the Reagan year level. No, no, no. Just, you know, maybe 5%. And how did the Republicans respond to that? The wealthy people in this country are going to crucify you. They're going to smash you. They're going to let you starve. They don't care about your children. They don't care about anything. Just leave their money, their wealth alone, and their means to continue to rip it off from the rest of us. Teeny Meany writes, Mike, if these frauds were really serious about cutting entitlements, so-called, why the hell did they not start with their own? Free taxpayer-subsidized health care off the backs of the working class in this country when these millionaires can well afford to pay their own medical costs. Not that it would make even a ding in the deficit, but an honest gesture at the very least. But no, we have to throw the elderly and helpless under the bus. These pieces of doo-doo should not sacrifice anything, nor their crony lobbyist friends. Fiends. I meant fiend. I didn't misspell friend. Oh, okay. Wouldn't it be nice if Boehner saw his reflection in the bottom of his martini glass in the congressional lunchroom and had one of those alcoholic moments of clarity? Oh, wait. I must have lost my mind there for a moment. That would mean he has a conscience, and that was pickled by booze a long time ago. The conscience was. These are the most sorry-ass excuses for human beings we've seen in a long time. A filthy, diseased rat has better character than these folks. Teeny Meany, a filthy, diseased rat. Oh, my God. A filthy, that's a little, In Traverse City, Michigan, work on replacing a 30-year-old air traffic control tower at Cherry Capital Airport has been halted. The job was about 40% completed. Crews had planned to lift the cab section to the top of the tower this week. But that was before the Republicans forced a partial shutdown of the Federal Aviation Administration, the furlough of nearly 4,000 federal workers, and the issuance of stop work orders for dozens of airport construction projects around the country. More people out of work. My God. This John Micah, or Mika Freak, a Republican from Florida, chairman of the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee. Oh, really, John? What are you doing in transportation and infrastructure, you pig? What are you doing? You're the chairman of the committee. What projects have you and your filthy compadres begun? What work orders have you issued? What kind of jobs are you providing to get people back to work? You're the chairman, huh, of the Transportation Infrastructure Committee? Anyway, this right-wing teabag freak said there have been no negotiations to resolve the dispute. The dispute? The dispute. What's the dispute? But how could there be a dispute? This is the FAA. How could there be a dispute? Republican leaders said they are determined to hold their position, and that the Senate must accept their bill to extend FAA operations through mid-September, even though it contains a provision eliminating $16.5 million in subsidies for 13 rural airports. Democrats say that provision is unacceptable. There they go again. Huh? You like this? This is what I was talking about before the election. I said, let these bastards get elected, and let's see what happens. Well, there you go. There's something else I wanted to share with you here. Where is it? Krugman had this little blog piece about the cult that is destroying America. And, oh, my God, you know, I don't agree with Krugman 99% of the time. I agree with him 100%. And don't think I've ever read anything that Paul Krugman has written that I went, oh, well, no, sorry, Paul. I have decided to divorce Chris Hedges. He and I are no longer married after what he wrote about religious fundamentalists and the equivalence between religious fundamentalists and atheistic fundamentalists. Sorry, Chris. I'll still go to D.C. and participate in the demo in, when's it, Kathy, in October. But I insist on a divorce, separate maintenance. You're on your own now, pal. How dare you? How dare you insinuate, Chris Hedges, that there is equivalence between the Christian crazy bastards, the religious crazy bastards on this planet who are slowly destroying everything, and the atheistic fundamentalists, as you refer to them, who are doing nothing of the sort except begging for rational thought, begging to drop this religious nonsense that's eating the planet alive. Sorry, Chris. I don't like you anymore. Goodbye. Now, with Krugman, I don't have that problem. Krugman says, watching our system deal with the debt ceiling crisis, a wholly self-inflicted crisis, which may nonetheless have disastrous consequences, it's increasingly obvious that what we're looking at is the destructive influence of a cult that has really poisoned our political system. Oh, what's he talking about here? A cult? What? And no, I don't mean the fanaticism of the right. Well, okay, that too. But my feeling about those people is that they are what they are. You might as well denounce wolves for being carnivores. Crazy is what they do. Crazy is what they are. See what I mean? This is Krugman. Now, he doesn't write this stuff for the New York Times. No. This is on his blog site. No, the cult that I see as reflecting a true moral failure is the cult of balance, of centrism. Here we go. Think about what's happening right now. We have a crisis in which the right is making insane demands, while the president and Democrats in Congress are bending over backward to be accommodating, offering plans that are all spending cuts and no taxes, plans that are far to the right of public opinion. So what do most news reports say? They portray it as a situation in which both sides are equally partisan, equally intransigent, because news reports always do that. And we have influential pundits calling out for a new centrist party, a new centrist president, to get us away from the evils of partisanship. The reality, of course, is that we already have a centrist president, actually a moderate conservative president. Once again, health reform, his only major change to government, was modeled on Republican plans. Indeed, plans coming from the Heritage Foundation and everything else. Everything is according to the conservative playbook. What does this mean? Stick around. I'll tell you as soon as we come back.
Just a part of it, we've got to fulfill the bull. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs.
The hour. Okay, back to Krugman's blog. It is in the New York Times, but you know, it's not on the op-ed page. I don't think they would allow him to say, crazy is what they do and crazy is what they are, referring to right-wingers. Anyway, he says, what all this means is that there is no penalty for extremism. No way for most voters who get their information on the fly rather than doing careful study of the issues to understand what's really going on. You have to ask, what would it take for these news organizations and pundits to actually break with the convention that both sides are equally at fault? This is the clearest, starkest situation one can imagine short of civil war. If this won't do it, nothing will. And yes, I think this is a moral issue. The both sides are at fault. People have to know better. If they refuse to say it, it's out of some combination of fear and ego, of being unwilling to sacrifice their treasured pose of being above the fray. It's a terrible thing to watch, and our nation will pay the price. What Krugman is referring to, obviously, is something that has just been an irritation to me for as long as I can remember. There is not equivalence on both sides of an argument. Every argument. There simply is not. If I say all children at the age of 3 must be decapitated, and you say, no, all children at the age of 3 must not be decapitated, are you going to tell me that our arguments are equivalent? It's just one side, my side, saying off with their heads, and the other side saying, no, leave their heads on. There is equivalence there? No, for those of you who have just been confused terribly by what I just said. And so it goes with this so-called debate that's going on right now. That the right-wingers, the Republicans, the teabaggers, the conservatives, the people who hate this country and are trying to destroy it on the one side of this issue, saying no! No! And the people on the other side saying, look, we've got to find a compromise. No! And the news media treat this as though it's two sides arguing. How many times have you seen it? How many polls do you have to read? Well, the American public is just sick and tired of this nonsense in Washington. Both sides are at fault. They're all nuts. No, they're not. No, they're not. You have a bad party and a worse party, but they are not equivalent. And the arguments that are being batted back and forth by these half-wits in the Republican Party, which, by the way, is starting to eat its own feet now, you'll notice. Boehner is having to retract all of it, start all over again. Because the psychotic teabaggers, the ones who are there for sport to bring the country down, the Christian fundamentalists, the freakoids, the ones who say, well, it doesn't say any of this in the Bible, are going to bring the country down. You don't think so? You think they're going to pull out of this by, when's the big day? The 2nd or the 3rd of August? When is that, Kathy? Next week? Next Monday? Tuesday? Wednesday? Something like that, huh? Do you think they're going to have a deal between now and then? No, they're not. There's not going to be a deal. Hold on to your ass. Just hold on to it. That's right. Reach around. Okay. Whew. Now grab a hold, because it's a coming, folks. And it's not like the Y2K thing where, remember, where for like, 18 months leading up, and the Beck types had a field day selling people on dehydrated water and all that other kind of stuff, you know, for the apocalypse that was just over the next hill. Here it comes, Y2K, you know, every computer, all of it, from dentists drilling bits all the way up to the supercomputers that run nuclear war. They're all going to crash. It's all over. Oh, my God. Get your money out. Buy gold. Here, buy these beans. And what happened? Well, nothing. Does it sound like I'm undermining my own argument? No, I'm making my own argument. The debt situation is entirely different. But the Y2K thing, this is why you see so many of these absolutely vacant Republicans in the House. Well, nothing's going to happen. Are you kidding? Like Michelle Bachmann, nothing's going to happen on August 2nd. No, we're not going to reach a deal, but nothing's going to happen. There's plenty of money. There's all kinds of money. It's laying all over the place. Just go outside. There's money under bushes. There's money on the tops of cars. There's money in dumpsters. There's money all over the place. Go get some money. It's okay. Nothing's going to happen. So Krugman and I have been trying to say the same thing for a long time. Equivalence, my ass. There is no equivalence. There is a bad political party, and there's the other one is the one that wants to destroy America. So don't believe the equivalence nonsense, please.
Against the Flying Monkey Right with Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. Just think about that for a moment. If Bush had not given the wealthy the tax cut that he did, if he had not ordered two unfunded wars, if he had not signed into law the unfunded Medicare prescription drug program, which was designed really to destroy Medicare, if he hadn't done those three things, we would now have zero debt and balanced budgets into the foreseeable future. So once again, the Republican thugs in D.C. are insane. They're just out of their, just totally out of their minds. That makes great sport watching them slice their own throats as they slice the country's throats, huh? And the sainted Ronald Reagan raised the capital gains taxes to 87%. Right now they're at 15%. Why didn't somebody tell these pissants, these Republicans, that little bit of truth? This hour is sponsored by Andrew Schmidt, and he wants you to go to hexistore.com. It's HEXISTOR, hexistore.com. Hexistore, the provider of online backup for small businesses. Check them out. Thanks, Andrew. Former speechwriter for the Bush crime family and current Republican advisor, his name is Joshua Trevino. He tweeted his 5,716 Twitter followers days before the second flotilla was set to embark to Gaza from various ports around the Middle East. And he said, quote, "Dear IDF," the Israeli Defense Forces, "Dear IDF, if you end up shooting any Americans on the new Gaza flotilla, well, most Americans are cool with that, including me." Really? Another right-wing son of a bitch who advocates the murder of his fellow citizens because they are protesting the apartheid conditions imposed upon the Palestinians by the Israelis. So this piece of human waste says, hey, most Americans are cool with if you shoot some Americans. You know, it's okay. The American activists, if you need refreshing here, headed to Gaza include Hedy Epstein, an 86-year-old Holocaust survivor, Alice Walker, the Pulitzer Prize-winning author of The Color Purple, former CIA analyst Ray McGovern, and retired Army colonel and former U.S. diplomat Anne Wright. Now, where these people are right tonight, this minute, I don't know, but this pig bastard, Republican advisor and former Bush administration speechwriter Joshua Trevino says, "Dear IDF, if you end up shooting any Americans on the new Gaza flotilla, well, most Americans are cool with that. Really, you filthy, traitorous dog? Really? Are most Americans cool with that, huh? Are they? Including me, he adds. This is what this country has produced. This is what the Republican Party has produced. This is what conservatism has produced. The advocating of the shooting of Americans who are protesting horrific conditions of a people under the thumb of a mighty military. Let me ask you something, Mr. Trevino. Supposing you had some sort of conversion on your own personal road to Damascus and you were on that boat. Ah, never mind. Never mind. Never mind. Florida, according to Think Progress, Florida is seeking bids from private companies to take over management of 30 state prisons in an 18-county area in South Florida. They want the lowest bidder to take over prisons. Think about that for just a moment. The lowest bidder. Can you imagine what these hellholes are going to be like when they're turned over to private enterprise, the lowest bidder? This is another move by Governor Rick Scott, this bald-headed criminal, and the Florida legislature, in an effort to cut costs. They've set a deadline of January 1, 2012, to privatize 30 state prisons, road camps, and work release centers. The state will hire only one company to run all those prisons, which sets up a high-stakes competitive battle between the nation's two biggest private prison operators, Corrections Corporation of America, CCA, based in Nashville, and the CEO group of Boca Raton. CGEO group. What are you saying, CEO? You want your ass to go to jail? We're GEO. The bidding process is moving ahead despite a lawsuit filed by the Florida Police Benevolent Association, which happens to be the bargaining agent for unionized correction officers. Unionized correction officers at privately run prisons that will become privately run by the corporation that turns in the lowest bid. Unionized correction officers? Oh, my God. The executive director of the Police Benevolent Association, Matt Puckett, said he had not thoroughly analyzed the bid documents and could not comment on them in detail. But he said many PBA members in South Florida are, his word, devastated at the prospects of having to find new jobs or move upstate to keep their prison jobs. You know, there's almost as much money in the prison industrial complex as there is in the God business. Are you aware of that? Huh? You want to get filthy rich very quickly? Get some investors and open up a company and call yourself We Kick Their Ass Incorporated and open up prisons. Or start a megachurch. Either way, you're going to make a lot of money. As Think Progress previously reported, Governor Rick Scott has long advocated privatizing prisons, which, quote, Governor Scott says this, could open a lucrative door to politically connected vendors who stand to profit. Yes. Yes. GEO Group already manages two of the state's seven private prisons and is a, quote, prime financier of the Republican Party, end quote. They gave more than $400,000 to the Republicans in the 2010 election cycle alone and gave the maximum $25,000 to Governor Rick Scott's inaugural ball fund. The Corrections Corporation of America, the CCA, they're the nation's largest prison industrial complex. They also have close connections to Republican state houses across the country. This company, CCA, spent $373,000 in political contributions in Florida alone since 2003. Imagine, $373,000 from them, $400,000 from the others. That's almost $1 million. Imagine if that would have been applied to prison education programs, prison health programs, prison mental health programs, right? Because what's the number? 95%, 90% of people locked down and treated like animals eventually will be freed. How do you want the prisoners coming out? Do you want them coming out insane and ready to kill? Or do you want them coming out with having had some counseling and maybe a marketable skill? Which one do you want, you Republican son of a bitch? I know which one you want. You don't care. Because you think you're okay. You live in a gated community, or maybe you have a private security force. We're just amazing in this country, aren't we? Aren't we just amazing? We will allow private prison CEOs or companies to contribute almost $1 million to one in one state for political favors, and yet the people inside the prisons that they manage are denied, oh, I don't know what, everything? We don't have any frills down here. They broke the law. Listen to that goddamn Malloy. There he goes again, that liberal crap. Getting soft on prisoners, hey, Malloy? Oh, by the way, last year, CCA, Corrections Corporation of America, and the GEO group made over $2.9 billion in revenue. Stop playing Melissa Etheridge once you start. You know what I'm saying? from Holland, peace, truth seeker. Hi, Mike. I live in Holland. I know you are busy. I wanted to shine a light on the fact that the Dutch authorities are going to investigate the ties that asshat murderer from Norway has or had with PW, the extreme right-wing party in Holland. It is a fact that PW spreads its hate. The sad thing is they are part of the Dutch government. Really sad events. The PW is a right-wing party which preaches hate. They want to minimize government or even ban it if they have the chance. Well, thanks, Peace Truth Seeker from Holland. This hour has been sponsored by Andrew Schmidt, and he wants you to go to the website hexistore.com, H-E-X-I-S-T-O-R, hexistore.com. His message, Hexistore is a provider of online backup for small businesses. So check out Andrew's site, will you please? Hexistore.com, H-E-X-I-S-T-O-R, Hexistore. From George in Oregon, the media died from CTD, corporate transmitted disease, brought to us by media consolidation and sociopaths like Murdoch and his talking bobbleheads. There are real journalists out there, but they have to work on the internet because the corporate media isn't interested in the truth. The corporate whores talk equivalency, and the real journalists call it what it is: corruption, greed, and a good bit of cowardice. By the way, Y2K could have been a disaster. Cooler heads figured it out ahead of time, and those of us in the IT business worked our asses off to get things upgraded before it hit the fan. I can't tell you how many routers and switches I upgraded in Washington and Oregon. From George in Oregon and from Prairie 2, it amazes me that Y2K has become an urban myth to be exploited by the right, just as they exploited the potential of a computerized disaster in 1999. Just like Glenn Beck selling overpriced gold to people worried about the crash he's helping to cause. About Y2K, even with 10 years of preparation and every available programmer poring over code, there were several major network failures and who knows how many minor incidents. If nothing had been done, we would have gone dark for years. The problem was that computer code written in the 60s, when every bit or memory was precious, was still in widespread use in 1999, or 99 as the code was written. But of course, the smart people did something about it, while the conservatives took advantage of the ignorant. People who don't understand their toaster are now sure there is no global warming, and the so-called urban myth of Y2K is now pointed to as proof that scientists lie about these things in a grand conspiracy to make money. Yeah. Which brings me to... I guess I'll do this next hour when we come back, yeah. From Jim in Burlingame, California, Mike, I just finished listening to last night's show, and I can't believe some of your listeners crying about your ranting against the president and the Democrats, especially the emailer Manuel, who canceled his podcast subscription. I'd like to ask Manuel and anyone who thinks like him, not to make this personal, but what the hell do they have to see? Manuel says that you, Mike, would like to see the country governed from the left, but that is not possible. Left? Since when did preserving Social Security become a leftist-only cause? I'll tell you when. In the Gilded Age, that's when. I mean the new Gilded Age, soon to be the same as the old Gilded Age. For 30 years, the Democrats have been reaching across the aisle to compromise with the Republicans on everything. Is it not obvious that the compromising has been in one direction? Haven't these people figured out that with this one-way compromising, the country is still moving to the right, just maybe half as fast? I ask you, Democrats, if you keep moving to the right, where do you think the Republicans are going to move in order to convince the public there is a difference between the two? To the left? Somebody called Bellevue. So I think I'll keep ranting with you, Mike, and maybe they will give us adjoining padded cells. Jim in Burlingame, California. Yeah, I took some crap last night from people who just do not like my approach to the Democrats and the president, and that's cool. I mean, that's what politics are supposed to be about, not this murderous game of chicken that they're playing in D.C. But in my opinion, and it's only my opinion, although it's shared by a lot of people, Barack Obama is an absolute failure as a president, as a leader. And he's a coward, and he's a liar. He's a liar. I can remember during the campaign, remember his famous statement that he would join people on the picket line, he'd put on a pair of comfortable shoes and get out there and advocate for the working man and woman. And Barack Obama never even mentioned Wisconsin. No, I'm sorry, folks. You go ahead and continue to vote Democratic. Go right ahead. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Sponsored by Lauren. Excuse me. My goodness. Lauren is this hour's sponsor. Lauren writes, Truth Seekers, read Parable of the Sower by Octavia Butler. Mike, read it to us. Prophetic genius. Sower. Parable of the Sower. S-O-W-E-R by Octavia Butler. You have tickled my curiosity, Lauren. Lauren sponsors this hour. Thank you, Lauren. I appreciate it. Now I'm going to have to look it up. Okay, massive correction. I was listening to Chris Matthews today, and he had Bruce Bartlett on, and tax expert, and yada yada. If you know about Bruce Bartlett, you know about Bruce Bartlett. Anyway, I'm sure I heard him say that the top capital gains tax rate under Reagan was 87%. Apparently, I have stuck my foot in it once again. So let me make a correction here, thanks to Michael and Roswell. Capital gains, as far as I know, have never been that high. The actual Reagan record on capital gains is that his Economic Recovery Tax Act of 1981 lowered the capital gains rate to 20%. Eventually, even Reagan was embarrassed by the lopsided advantage this gave to the wealthy and agreed to raise the rate to 28% in 1986, I think. It's worthwhile to remember that this recent talk that Reagan, quote, raised taxes 11 times is partly smoke and mirrors in an attempt to influence the current debate. Reagan and his supply-siders cut taxes on business and the wealthy drastically at first, and only when the annual deficits became embarrassingly large did Reagan accede to raising taxes partially. Most of these increases did not bring taxes on corporations and the wealthy back up to their pre-Reagan levels, hence the steadily increasing share of after-tax income accruing to the top 1% throughout the Reagan years and beyond. Various tax legislation through the early 80s, for example, reduced the top nominal personal income tax rate from 70% to 28%. Toward the end of Reagan's second term, revenues were down so severely that Reagan agreed to bring that top nominal rate up slightly to 31%. Bush won. Faced with further shortfalls, raised that rate again slightly to roughly 33%. IIRC, the tax increase that it contributed to his loss of the 1992 elections for violating his Read My Lips pledge. Clinton eventually got the Repugs to raise that rate to 39.6%. Even at that elevated rate in the 90s, income taxes on the very wealthy were still 44% lower than before Reagan entered office. And in that period, from 1980 onward, preferential treatment for the wealthy through tax code exceptions continued to accumulate, especially with regard to rules on tax havens, which is one of the reasons why the very wealthy are paying such incredibly low effective tax rates today, rates typically in the 16 to 18% range. Okay. And Michael wrote, small correction. No, that's not a small correction. That's a major correction. But anyway, thank you. Where are we? Okay. Now, just a little bit of forewarning here. This next thing I'm going to share with you is out of the New Yorker magazine, June 13th and 20th issue. And if you are just a refuse to see the light Obama supporter, you might want to just go away from the program for a couple of minutes here, because this is, it's going to be classified by you and probably other people as another example of my Obama bashing. Did I say Reagan? I meant Obama bashing. So here we go. The chief economist for the International Energy Agency in Paris announced recently that despite the economic slowdown, right, the global economic slowdown, CO2 emissions, carbon dioxide emissions last year rose by a record amount to almost 31 billion metric tons into the atmosphere. He said, quote, "I'm very worried. This is the worst news on emissions," end quote. Now, as the New Yorker says, when Obama took office, he appointed some of the country's most knowledgeable climate scientists to his administration. And it did seem for a time as if he might take his responsibility to lead on this issue seriously. That hope has faded. The president sat on the sidelines in 2009 and 2010 while congressional leaders tried to put together majorities in favor of climate legislation. And I'm sure most of us remember that, right? Do you remember? Do you remember? And to sit on the sidelines while these crazy bastards on the Republican right have made nothing but a mockery of Al Gore's An Inconvenient Truth and all the information out there that leads a rational mind to conclude that we are involved, deeply involved now in global climate change. Do you remember? And Obama sat on the sidelines. New Yorker goes on, since the midterm elections, Obama has barely mentioned climate change. And just about every decision that his administration has made on energy and the environment has been wrong. In March, the Obama administration announced that it would be opening up new public lands in Wyoming for coal mining. In April, he delayed plans to impose stricter controls on the mining technique known as mountaintop removal. In May, his administration put on hold rules aimed at cutting pollution from power plants at places like paper mills and refineries. Also in May, Obama announced plans to increase domestic oil production by speeding up permits to drill off the coast of Alaska and in the Gulf of Mexico. Of course, it almost goes without saying at this point that the president's potential opponents next November are all worse on the issue. See, here we go again. Do you want bad? Do you want worse? Do you want to slowly choke to death? Or do you want your children to slowly choke to death? Which one do you want? Back to the New Yorker. Tim Pawlenty, who as governor of Minnesota took some commendable actions on climate change, has now renounced them, saying that everyone, quote, has got some clunkers in their record, end quote. Much of the same holds for the former Massachusetts governor, Mitt Romney, minus the commendable actions. National Journal has summed up the situation this way, quote, the GOP is stampeding toward an absolutist rejection of climate science that appears unmatched among major political parties around the globe. Obama knows, and indeed has stated as much, that if we continue along our present path, we'll guarantee our children a much more dangerous future. Taking the steps that would reduce the risks of climate change is not going to be political popular, which is why it is the president's obligation to press for them. It may be beyond our power to control the climate, but we can determine it. This is precisely what we're doing right now, whether we choose to acknowledge it or not. In The New Yorker, written by Elizabeth Colbert. That's just one more nail in the coffin, don't you think? One more example of how the leadership in this country, starting with the president and working down through the vermin, all the way at the bottom of the Republican Party, the teabaggers, that the leadership in this country is totally compromised, is not leading, doesn't give a damn, cares nothing. In the meantime, it just feels like, doesn't it, that everything is just kind of, I don't know, if you pay attention to it, you notice that it's starting to tilt further and further and further. And there are laws of gravity, and there are centers of gravity that more or less must be obeyed, but nobody seems to be paying any attention to that.
Liberal is a good word. It's more Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. From Ryan in Illinois, I got so many of these emails after last night's program, I'm going to share them all with you, but Ryan writes, Mike, I heard someone on the show last night say he would cancel his subscription due to your being hard on Obama. I will keep mine for the exact same reason. I grow so tired of the Obama apologists who are no better than the conservatives in this respect. Instead of valuing ideals and deeply rooted beliefs, they idolize particular humans. Reagan is a god despite being fiscally irresponsible and adding more debt than the first 39 presidents combined. Now, are we to be as foolish as they and follow Obama despite his actions? Should we defend somebody that we would despise if he had an R after his name instead of a D? The Obama apologists are not truth seekers, so they cannot hear your truth. Keep speaking it to those of us who are not impressed when a leader's best and only recommendation is not being a Republican. Just because the other choice is poison does not mean I will indulge in a feces-laden sandwich. God! Keep your realistic and necessary cynicism lit, Mike. If we don't abandon the Democracy Party, or if we don't abandon the Democratic Party that has screwed us for decades with the promise of a great society 2 years from now, always 2 years from now, all is lost. Democracy is more important than the DNC, Ryan in Illinois. Yeah, can you imagine the screaming from me and other people if a Republican president had laid out as a means of cutting a deal what amounts to nothing less than an attack. You can decide for yourself how serious the attack is, but an attack on Social Security and Medicare and the defunding of this social services safety net or social safety net that we put together, the government has put together over years, over eight decades. The devil is always in the details for sure. But the way Obama is so willing, and sometimes he seems eager, to offer compromise when none has been sought. I mean, he offers compromise before the starting gun. And he puts on the table up for revision or rescission or complete gutting programs that ideas that have been the underpinning of the Democratic Party for eight decades. And those of us who criticize that, I mean, Clinton did the same thing. Those of us who criticize that are supposed to shut up because the alternative is a Republican. What do you call these policies? What do you call some of the things Obama has done as the supposed leader of the country? I mean, help me here. Don't just sit back and send me emails or tell me you're going to cancel a subscription because I point out something that to me is so obvious it's like a scream at midnight. I mean, what the hell? To support somebody blindly, or what appears to be blindly, simply because they're a Democrat, and because the person doing that supporting is terrified of the Republican, which might not be a bad emotion to feel, but is willing to go along with a Democratic Party that continues to chip away, sometimes with a sledgehammer, at programs and ideas that are so desperately needed in this country and are part of the fabric of this country, and to just start hammering away at them. What the hell do you want someone like me or whoever else does this to do? To shut up and pretend like Barack Obama is this Democrat? No, he's not. I mean, even Krugman, people are identifying he's a center-right president. Why doesn't that register? Why doesn't that sink in to Democrats? I mean, why aren't Democrats apparently capable of seeing that? He is not a liberal. He is not a center left. He is not a center. He is a center right president. So why do people keep jiving themselves into believing that he's a liberal or a progressive? He is not.
First I was attracted, but after a while, have you ever heard of a hard to get game? How can I miss you when you fall away? I keep telling you day after day, but you won't listen, you always stay. How can I miss you when you
against right-wing rhetoric, get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
That sounds echoey, that music, doesn't it, Truth Sticker? Doesn't that sound echoey, kind of? Huh? 25 before the hour. Sounds like she's singing inside of a dumpster. This hour is sponsored by Lauren. Thank you, Lauren. Her message, Truth Seekers, read Parable of the Sower, S-O-W-E-R. Parable of the Sower by Octavia Butler. Mike, read it to us. Prophetic genius. I'll take a look at it. I don't know. It's been a long time since I've read a novel in the air. 1980. Well, maybe it's not a novel. I haven't taken a look. From Roz, regarding equivalency and this stupidity that's reported as news on the television networks especially. Regarding what you were saying about nothing substantial being reported on the news, I have to agree, strangely or not, a woman named Brooke, who does the afternoon show on CNN, oh yeah, was wondering what caused the murder spree in Norway. What was the motive? But instead of staying on that topic and giving us something meaty, she instead proceeded with the usual pap. She wanted to speak to a woman who was waiting for news of her daughter, and Brooke was wondering how that must have felt for the woman. That's what passes for news, and it's disgusting. Can't say I'm surprised. They would never get the real reason that the murderer was a right-wing Christian extremist, a racist filled with hatred for all things Islam. He was too much like the American Christian right-wing loonies. I guess that the silence must be some sort of obeisance now to those who don't want this thought, who don't want this brought to the forefront on this particular news channel, quote, quote. Yeah, Brooke, what's your last name? I forget her last name. She is not, she was Rick Sanchez's sidekick. Brooke what? No, Rick Sanchez, the sidekick until he got canned. And she stepped in, and it's just astonishing the depth of this woman's ignorance. I'm not saying stupidity. I'm saying ignorance. The depth of her ignorance. I knew she was going to have a very steep learning curve if she was going to anchor. What does she anchor? 2-3 hours on CNN in the afternoon? But my God, apparently nobody at CNN is tutoring her on, or they hired her because she just skims across the tops of things with a kind of ignorance that's just stunning. Just stunning. She belongs on Fox. She's like that Steve Juicy, or Ducey, whatever the hell his name is. I mean, I have never seen that kind of disconnect from any kind of political reality or any kind of reality necessary to a channel that touts itself as a news channel. I don't care if it's Fox, CNN, MSNBC. It doesn't make any difference. If you have somebody like Brooke sitting there in the afternoon who wants to ask, oh, and by the way, the woman she was talking to, her daughter, I happened to be watching that segment today, Roz, in stunned silence. And her daughter, I think it was the same segment, her daughter was okay. Her daughter, it was a series of texting back and forth between the mom and the daughter. And it was horrifying. It really was. It was terrible, a terrible thing for a mother to go through. But if Brooke is going to tackle the story of what caused it, then, I mean, don't even go there, Brooke, because, first of all, you don't have the depth, the slight depth of knowledge about the whole issue of immigration in Northern Europe and homogeneous societies feeling like they're under attack and the rise of these nationalist parties, and it just goes on and on, coupled with the extremism directed against Muslims that has surfaced after a hiatus of how many years? How many centuries? And here it is again. And it's being fanned by the Christian right in this country and other countries. It's just madness. It's just total madness. And I'm not cutting any slack whatsoever to the Muslim extremists either. Any religious extremist is to me, by definition, sick in the head. Just completely, completely out of his or her mind, to the point where they will commit mass murder if they're a Christian. They will commit mass suicide if they're a Muslim. They will become Nazis if they're extremist Jews. I mean, the whole thing is just insane. just insane. Whatever happened to the idea? Maybe it's just something that floated around in my head, was never really real. It seems to me it was. Maybe it's because I was a kid at the time. But religion was something that you didn't talk about. It was like going to the bathroom. You didn't talk about it. You just did it. And now, I mean, my God, every time you turn around, you know, this Christian stuff is being jammed in everybody's head in this country. And if you live in a different part of the world and you're not a Muslim, they'll lop your damn head off. And the fundamentalist Jews in the Middle East are determined to out-Nazi the Nazis. What the hell happened? Oh, I know. I know. I'm into my "can't we all get along" riff. No, you can't. Religious people can never ultimately get along because they are gambling on ownership of your soul. What they consider to be your soul. They have no idea what the soul is. They are selling snake oil of the stinkiest, nastiest kind. And that is your mortality. They are liars, cheats, thieves, and sneaks. Every single one of them. So, you know, this idea of ecumenism, these ecumenical councils where they get together, I mean, they even dig up, indigenous healers from the Aborigine people in Australia, and they get all these people, bring them together. Where do they bring them together? Rome or someplace, and all of a sudden you have representatives from 90 religions, and you know damn good and well if you gave each one of them a gun and said, and somebody screamed, "Your God stinks," there would be a mass killing. You know this. But I guess, you know, I mean, a lot of people get some comfort out of going to church or mosque or temple on their holy days and sitting there and chanting and doing, you know, singing the hymns. I mean, Christians don't chant, but it's more or less like chanting when they sing, you know, the old rugged cross or "Near My God to Thee" or whatever. I guess there's some comfort in that. To me, it's just creepy. It's just bizarre. You know, to attend a universalist service or a humanist gathering or, you know, something of that nature, a rationalist group who may want to acknowledge and honor the spiritual aspect of a human being is one thing. But to subscribe to religious beliefs that are murderous, whose entire histories have been blood and destruction and murder and mayhem, and gods that are as vicious and jealous and hateful as anything you find in Roman or Greek mythology. I mean, why? What is this? And then you have some bastard like Rick Warren. What's his name? No, Warren, the guy I was just talking about earlier. Rick Warren, is it Rick Warren? The Saddleback mega church with 80 million members or whatever. Tweeting, sticking his religious nonsense mind into a political tweet, which was just anti-Christ to begin with. Not only was it a lie, but his own defined avatar of his own God has told him over and over in his own holy book that you don't do this. You take care of people. You are your brother's keeper and your sister's. But these mega church monsters? No, they're not. They're not anybody's keepers. They are liars. The purpose-driven life. Oh, I'm sorry. The purpose-driven life. Get out of town. So anyway, our Miss Brooke on CNN, who teases a segment where she's going to talk about the horror that was this murderous Christian right-wing he's not a psychopath, he's just a murderous Christian right-winger. deciding to murder scores of people, dozens of people, most of whom were young, because he doesn't like Muslims, because he doesn't like immigrants. So he's going to kill a bunch of Norwegian children. Maybe the son of a bitch is insane. I mean, it's just like Timothy McVeigh. Well, I don't like the United States government, so I'm going to go kill 168 people, including a bunch of kids. That'll show them. You sick sons of bitches.
Hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Paranoia strikes deep. Into your life it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid.
This hour has been sponsored by Lauren. Thank you, Lauren. She has a message. Truth seekers, read Parable of the Sower, S-O-W-E-R, by Octavia Butler. And Mike, read it to us. Prophetic genius. I'll check it out, Lauren. I really will. From Michael in Oregon City. This just came in during the break. Michael writes, as a podcast subscriber, I'm always a day late on the conversation. Mike, I simply can't put into words the rage I feel watching the circus in Washington the way you can. I hate to say it, but when you take calls, it makes me miss the rants I need to confirm my humanity. I discovered you on KPOJ during the Air America days and instantly disliked you and your message. As I had just woke up from a conservative stupor back then, I did what I always did. I vetted every point you made and every position on the issues. God damn if you weren't right. Right as rain. My heart sank as I realized I was a closet liberal, if that is still a good term. I began to fight with my church friends, conservative acquaintances, and eventually I told them all to piss off. I studied my heart, Mike, and eventually told my family and friends I was an ardent socialist, and if you don't like it, get the F out of my life. That was 7 or 8 years ago. Hell, I don't even remember. Since my conversion to sanity, I bought into a small business and socialized the profits as best I could. We saved one owner's house from foreclosure by shunting most of the money her way. Today, we employ 5 people, part-time and a couple full-time. We have health care coverage for 4 of them, and we are keeping our head above water, business-wise. I would tell you that people not exposed to socialist ideals really don't get the concepts until they live it. And even then, it's tough to keep them on board all the time. The point of my little story is that you affected me personally, Mike. It took someone with as much rage and anger as I had to help open my dull cow eyes to see a different way of living. It's tough, even up here in Oregon, but it's worth it. Too bad we lost one subscriber. His loss. Keep it up, brother, and keep it lit. Michael in Oregon City. Well, thanks, Michael. That was a very kind letter on the one hand. On the other hand, it's enlightening. I mean, I think everybody's journey has similarities and differences for sure. But, you know, if you're on a path to try to find the truth, to really try to find the truth before you die. And what's the truth? It's just the set of realities or laws that govern, you know, this little flash that we call existence, because that's all it is, folks. I mean, you know, I'm not going to go all philosophical on you because I can't. I'm not that well educated, but I do know that the time we spend here is just a flash. It's just a brief flash of light, in the center of which sits us. And, you know, how you handle that how anyone handles that before it's extinguished. And it is extinguished. It really is. I mean, as Kurt Vonnegut said, death is just another, what did he say? Death is just another night. It's just another night. I think that's what he said. It's either that or it's just another night's sleep. But, you know, how we handle that brief flash of consciousness speaks volumes about the trip, the journey, you know, what you're doing, what I'm doing, what anybody's doing. And the thing that is the aspect of that little flash where we all live is that, you know, in so many instances, so many of us never, ever, 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 ever come to realize what we should be doing with that brief flash. I mean, why did you get it to begin with? You know, prior to your existence was infinity. And after your death is infinity. I mean, holy Toledo. Think about that for a second. You know, your life is right in the middle. There it is. Ding. So what do you do? I mean, this is the kind of stuff I think about.
Oh, well, that's because you did too many drugs, man.
Well, maybe it is. Maybe it is. But, you know, when you're my age and you have a child the age of Molly, like I do, and you've read just enough Buddhist thought to consider your own death, your own moment of being extinguished, you do think about it. One does think about it, for sure. With me and a seven-year-old, I've told Kathy, it's a constant rerunning of the numbers, and I constantly come up with the same answer. You know, my time with Molly, and other than my time with Kathy, that's, and of course my adult kids, right, but they're kind of on their own. But my time with Molly is about, the only meaning to me right now. And by right now, I mean for the rest of the time that I am alive. And you don't experience that. I never experienced that with my other kids. You know, I had children when I was in my 20s and 30s, and it just didn't, you know, I knew I had oceans of time, just like you had oceans of time at one point. We all had oceans of time. And, you know, the ocean gets deeper and deeper until you finally realize that treading water is no longer an option. Well, that's a cheerful note. No, it's not intended to be a downer. It just is. It is what it is. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Say goodnight, Kathy.
Goodnight, Kathy.